Chapter 37. I am sure we have all seen enough old movies to know that sensible people avoid abandoned amusement parks, especially when the sun is going down, which it was. Terrible things lurk in these places, and anyone who wanders in is only setting himself up for some kind of dreadful end. And perhaps I was being oversensitive, but Buccaneerland really did seem spookier than anything I had ever seen outside of a bad movie. There was an almost audible echo of distant laughter hanging over the dark and moldering rides and buildings, and it had a mocking edge to it, as if the long years of neglect had turned the whole place mean, and it just couldn't wait to see something bad happen to me. But apparently, Deborah had not done her due diligence in the old movie department. She seemed quite undisturbed as she drew her weapon and strode into the park, looking for all the world as if she were headed into the corner store to shoot some bacon rinds. Chutsky and I caught up with her about 100 feet inside the gate, and she barely glanced at us. "Spread out," she said. "Take it easy, Debs," Chutsky said. "Give us time to work the flanks." He looked at me and nodded to the left. "Go nice and slow around the rides, buddy. Go back behind the booths, sheds, any place somebody could be hiding. Sneak and peek, buddy. Keep your eyes and ears open. Keep one eye on Debbie, and be careful." He turned back to Deborah and said, "Debs, listen." But she waved her gun at him to cut him off. "Just do it, Chutsky, for God's sake." He looked at her for a moment. "Just be careful," he said. And then he turned away and moved out to the right. He was a very large man, and he had one artificial foot. But as he glided off into the dusk, the years and injuries seemed to melt away, and he looked like a well-oiled shadow, his weapon moving from side to side automatically. And I was very glad that he was here with his assault rifle and his long years of practice. But before I could begin to sing Halls of Montezuma, Deborah nudged me hard and glared at me. "What the fuck are you waiting for?" she said. And so, even though I would much rather have shot myself in the foot and gone home, I moved out to the left through the growing darkness. We stalked carefully through the park in best paramilitary fashion, the Lost Patrol on its mission into the land of the B-movie. To Deborah's credit, she was very careful. She moved stealthily from one piece of cover to the next, frequently looking right to Chutsky and then left at me. It was getting harder to see her, since the sun had now definitely set, but at least that meant it was harder for them to see us, too, whoever them might turn out to be. We leapfrogged through the first part of the park like this, past the ancient souvenir stand, and then I came up to the first of the rides in Old Merry-Go-Round. It had fallen off its spindle and lay there leaning to one side. It was battered and faded, and somebody had chopped the heads off the horses and spray-painted the whole thing in day-glow green and orange, and it was one of the saddest things I had ever seen. I circled around it carefully, holding my gun ready, and peering behind everything large enough to hide a cannibal. At the far side of the merry-go-round, I looked to my right. In the growing darkness, I could barely make out Debs. She had moved into the shadow of one of the large posts that held up the cable car line that ran from one side of the park to the other. I couldn't see Chutsky at all. Where he should have been, there was a row of crumbling playhouses that fringed a go-kart track. I hoped he was there, being watchful and dangerous. If anything did jump out and yell boo at us, I wanted him ready with his assault rifle. But there was no sign of him, and even as I watched, Deborah began to move forward again deeper into the dark park. A warm, light wind blew over me, and I smelled the Miami night, a distant tang of salt on the edge of rotting vegetation and automobile exhaust. But even as I inhaled the familiar smell, I felt the hairs go up on the back of my neck, and a soft whisper came up at me from the lowest dungeon of Castle Dexter, and a rustle of leather wings rattled softly on the ramparts. It was a very clear notice that something was not right here, and this would be a great time to be somewhere else. I froze there by the headless horses, looking for whatever had set off the passenger's alarm. I saw and heard nothing. Deborah had vanished into the darkness, and nothing moved anywhere except a plastic shopping bag blowing by in the gentle wind. My stomach turned over, and for once it was not from hunger.